the only spiritual message there is to deliver is it's you. So what do I do for the next 20 minutes? Pick a topic, discuss. I had the pleasure of experiencing the late Eric Butterworth at the end of his career. And I think his expression of ministry followed his own personal trajectory, and I hope that that is true for all ministers, that our message becomes simpler over time. And the only thing that he would talk about towards the end of his life is that it's you. That's the message, and that's the teaching of the perennial philosophy, and that's what certainly Dr. Holmes speaks of and teaches us in The Science of Mind, is that you are the thing itself. And yet, why is it so hard to remember that and to live from that and to act from that? I'm going to segue into another topic, but oh yes, I'll come around to that one. I had the great pleasure for three of the Saturdays in February of teaching some ministerial students in the School of Spiritual Leadership, which is the ministerial track now for CSL, excuse me. And I was teaching them down at the Redondo Beach campus Old Testament Bible interpretation, which it was a blast. Reverend Tricia sat in on that class, and that was fun to have her in that class. It was good, wasn't it, Trish? Yeah, it's really fun. And most of us, our eyes would roll up in the back of our head and go, "Oh, Old Testament." But, you know, in RSI, we pretty, as a rule in LA, we don't talk about the Bible, and something was lost in that. It's a hugely impactful document. But one of the ways I like to encourage people to do Old Testament or any myth Bible interpretation is to do it along the lines of Jungian dream interpretation. And it's not complicated. It's extremely simple. And the premise is that if you're looking at any story or any experience, assume, so that you can divine the meaning from it, assume that every aspect of this story is some aspect of you. Assume that every character is some part of you. And when you examine, by way of retelling the story, almost as if it were a personal dream that you had had, that you will have an aha moment. You will have a revelation. We spent a lot of time talking about the Moses stories because there's so much richness in his career, such as it was. But there's richness in our everyday life. There are messages that are around us all the time that are not seeking to get our attention, that are pulling focus from what our life might be devoted to. And yet, if we take a half a step back and look at these events, for sure we can see that there is a personal message for us in the moment. And this is what I was trying to impart to the students that were in this class, that when they were giving their oral reports and doing their talks, I said, I would like you to please connect something in this Moses story to something that happened in the news this week so as to make it relevant. And here's how it works. What's high in my awareness this particular week, for example, was the 50th anniversary of what we call Bloody Sunday. And there was a memorial, not quite right to call it a celebration, but a memorial event of that in Selma, Alabama, yesterday. And many of us have seen the picture that's out now, Selma. And many of us remember it, if not all of us, watching this on the news when it happened 50 years ago. The message in it is twofold. There's an outer message, but then there's a personal message. We can say, look how far we've come. Praise God. We can also say, I realize that there is still yet important work to do. But when I examine it as if it were, for example, an Old Testament Bible story, I could say, now, what are these different aspects in this story? How are they reflecting as parts of me? Who is the intrepid person that walks forward in fear, but still walks forward to claim their good? Is there a part of me, a living part of me, that can do that? Yes, there is. And is there a part of me that is a violent, obnoxious bully? Not in regard to other people, but is there a part of me that when I get really, really close to claiming some good, some inherent good, is there a part of me that is so afraid of what it might cost that I will beat it down? And the answer is yes. These are all living energies. And if we take the time to be aware of it, the gift that we receive is that we will realize that we are larger than any one of those dynamics, but as Walt Whitman says, we indeed in truth contain multitudes, and that we can choose to identify, to allow one of these parts of us, one of the multitude, we can allow them to take the lead in our work life, in establishing what our values are, in reframing our dreams, in getting a once beautiful relationship, perhaps back on track. We can always yield to some other part of us. We don't have to be the bully, because what we learn through spiritual living and what we learn through the great sweep of history is that things change. And nothing is ever really lost. But we find new ways of being in a right relationship with new ideas, with old ideas, with habits, with addictions, and find new places for them, new strategies, new ways of being. See, there are things that are happening all the time that really are, if they're not outpicturing my individual consciousness, but we can always see something that's going on anywhere in the world, and we can ask ourselves, how am I like that? Am I doing that? Is there some part of me that is bulldozing precious artifacts, as is happening in Syria and Iraq right now? Is there some part of me that just wants the past to go away? I'll do whatever, I'll just destroy it. You think that's going to make it go away? No. No. Those strategies are, as a good Buddhist would say, very unskillful. And what we want to be doing all the time is developing skillful means of being in the world. So when we are really confronted with difficult situations and or people, we will have some strategy other than to get a baseball bat and try and put them in their place, if not with an actual one verbally. I don't do it much anymore, thank God. I guess I've grown up a little bit. But did you ever rehearse fights in your head? Oh, my God. And I wasn't even aware that I was doing that till I was about 48 or 49. I remember driving to work. I worked for a very strong-willed person. And her thing was, I just don't know why you can't do it my way. Just do it my way. And I would rehearse these dialogues. So then Betty, not her real name, is going to say, well, you have to do this because of such and such. And I'll go, oh, yeah? Well, we tried it your way once before, and this happened. And then she's going to say, obviously, I'd been doing that my whole life. And I thought I was getting good at it. For what end? For what possible good? None. This work invites us always to grow in self-awareness, you know? Because teaching the spiritual principles is pretty easy. It's done unto you as you believe. As within, so without. You know, you reap what you sow. The rest is commentary. But growing in self-awareness is the lifelong work that all of us get to do if you're brave enough to do it. I bet there's something on your mind right now. I bet that you are on a threshold of some kind. In some area of your life, something new, something old, initiating something, releasing something, starting a new project, making a real and noble effort to reframe yourself and appreciate yourself exactly as you are now. And that would be 62 for me as of this week. And thank you all very much who signed birthday cards. That was sweet. Thank you. But it's like, you know, I look at my arm and I go, Jesus, when did I get my father's left arm? What the heck? Everything is changing so fast. And yet, there's always new ideas. There's always something new that is possible. And it's never easy, but it's always simple to bring it into realization. If you have the confidence to do it. I wasn't sure what the word confidence really meant, so I did look it up, and I love the dictionary that I have because it's got great etymological pieces in it. And, you know, con means with. To conspire actually means to breathe together. And confidence means with what? Well, it means with fidelity. And fidelity in the English language means the deepest kind of integrity. The most, there's even in the dictionary, there's something very special and very sweet about the origins of the word fidelity, that they almost or probably have some spiritual root. But if we trust with fidelity, trust, integrity, in the deepest self that we are, for sure, we can have a different experience of everything. You can't make everything happen. They're not that powerful. But for sure we are the primary creative force of our own life, able to respond, if not create, every single situation that goes on, if we trust that we can take it to the next level. The song that Stephen just sang, I don't know why. I'm sure that when I was younger, when that song was popular, which was 30 years ago, there was something that almost makes me cry about that I'm thinking that it must be you. And so I use my Old Testament Bible interpretation, even on a song like that, in this moment. And who, what part of you is speaking to you? in that song. Because there are two players there. There's an implication of a relationship. And so there are two players. Therefore, there are two parts that are you. Is there a part of you that's holding back? Is there a part of you that's being shy about your future? Or being coy? Because that's what used to work when you were 28. And put three cocktails into the mix and it worked for sure. I don't know. It loses its charm when a guy gets to a certain age. When are you going to make up your mind? But is there a part of you that's like that? Of course there is. Especially if it's a new initiative. Of course they're going to be shy about it. If you're leaving that which is known, you are entering into unfamiliar territory. If you would be crazy not to be alert. Not necessarily scared or terrified. But you wouldn't be experiencing any average self-awareness if you were not at least super alert to where I am. This is new territory. I cannot be on automatic pilot right now. My agenda will bump into somebody else's experience, and it's not going to be pretty if I am not alert. If I'm not alert, I'm not going to bring the learning that I've had over the last X numbers of years into this situation to handle this with the grace that I really know I have. I do not want to reach into an old bag of tricks and throw out something that used to work. I want to be here now. I do not want to be withholding. And if I am shy by nature, and many of us are, that's okay. Be in right relationship with it. But what is that part of you that is saying, I have been waiting all my life for you to show up? Because there is a part of you that is sending that message. All of my life, I've been waiting just for you. And I know that it's you. There is a part of you that is speaking into that in the language of the soul. And it is awakened when we see great works of art, when we see thrilling pieces of theater or dance or hear music or read things. We have a shock of recognition. There's a direct communication of soul. The old school word was that something is quickened in you at the level of soul. You go, ah, I want that part of me to be the boss of this experience now. And with confidence, move forward. With real trust in my essential self, the self of Emerson, right? That divine quality within, and then to go forward. And of course, practical application of our teaching would have us, it is from that place that we treat from. Even in the science of mind, Dr. Holmes says, the five-step treatment that we are in the habit of doing, this is training wheels. I'll give you a shortcut to getting yourself in the right frame of mind to treat, to pray affirmatively for what it is, the healing that you're seeking and the creation that you're wanting to experience in your life. So here's the shortcut. Just ask yourself, all of my life I've been waiting for me to show up. Could it be you? Is it you? And if you can smile and say, yeah, it's me. And tell the universe whatever it is you need to be more of you in this world. I have to admit, and the spiritual leader of the organization's in the house, but I'm not going to edit what I was going to say. Be you. It's you. I'm not so sure, as Dr. Holmes said, that, you know, the mind must be convinced. I don't think it's the mind. I think it's the heart. I think it's the heart that needs to be awakened more than the mind. That there is one mind, yes, that's great. Sure. I can't know what that mind is. How can I experience the mind that's creating a supernova 100 trillion light years away? When I can know the quality of my own heart. And I could say, could it be me? Could I be enough to have a fuller experience? Could it be me? And I can see so many of you, and you're smiling because you know the answer is yes. And that is your body telling you, overriding your mind, which wants to argue with it. Your mind is a policeman that's standing at the other side of the Pettus Bridge in Alabama, saying, don't you dare think that you can go forward here. As sweet as you are, and as right as you might be, and as spiritually entitled as you might be, don't you dare. Get out of the road. As Glinda says to the Wicked Witch of the West, you have no power here, be gone. And that leaves us with what? Yeah, it's me. And speak the word from your heart about whatever it is you're seeking to experience. Is that going to be enough? You bet it is. And more than enough. And you are more than enough. You're too much. You. And I'm going to leave it at that. God bless you, friends. I appreciate you.